Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Welcome to Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschooled.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
It's time to document the journey.
Welcome back to Homeschool Podcast. It's Augustino Zoida, and I'm here with my buddy Nick Galarza, a.k.a. Player Juan, is in the building, you guys. Thanks for being here, dude. Really quickly, guys, I'm glad to be home for a little bit. I've been on the road a little, and I have a couple weeks home, so that's cool. But I go out again. If you guys have missed me so far, I will be in Portland, Oregon on July 14th, and then July 15th, I'm in Seattle, and then August 14th, I'm in Boston, Massachusetts, and then I go to Maui in September 20th, okay? So you can get tickets at homeschooledpod.com, click on tour, and that's also where you're going to find the merch, like our t-shirts, Homeschool Podcast t-shirts, and the t-shirts for my tour, which is called Only Love Can Save the World Tour, and you can get the t-shirts there, so make sure you get on that shit if you haven't already. Dude, let's just get right into it. Nick Galarza is here, everybody. First of all, congratulations on your new album, dude.
Thank you, man.
It's phenomenal. What I do is, before I go to a concert, I went to your concert the other night, which, great job. We'll talk about that in a second. But what I usually do before I go to a concert is, like, you know, especially like a new album, I go and I listen to that album all day. So that by the time you get to the concert, you're familiar with a lot of the, you know, the deep tracks.
So you're like in there.
Yeah, dude. So I was already listening to that all day, and then after your concert, the past couple, like the past week, I've had it on my iPod. You know, there's a couple of songs on there that I really like, and I have, and I keep playing them. That are dope. You're just a fucking talented dude, bro. I don't know what to say.
Thank you.
You're an artist. If anybody follows you on Instagram, we're all artists, like comedians, musicians. But I mean, like, you paint. And the shit that you draw and paint is fucking dope. And, I remember I met you through stand-up comedy, and you were always a really good comic. So, you know, it's not like you left comedy because it didn't work out to pursue the music career. I was like, you're your vision was somewhere else. But I remember you always having killer sets and being a really good storyteller. And you're a phenomenal musician and rapper. Is that okay to call you a rapper?
Yeah, you know what's so funny? I just had that conversation of, like, because I got into hip-hop music because of spoken word poetry, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I was never trying to, like, be a rapper. And the funny thing about most rappers is they'll never call themselves that. You know, they're always like, well, I'm an artist. I'm a hip-hop artist. And they'll say some shit, and it's like, and I think there's just a weird stigma of rapper because that's the most accessible thing someone who likes music can become. Because you can't just become a singer. You can't just be like, hey, I'm a singer. Well, you have to prove that. Like, you can't say I'm a producer or a musician. Because that's an easy thing to prove that you're not. But it's pretty hard to tell someone they're not a rapper just because the bar is so low for what that means. But yeah, I do make hip-hop music. It's extremely alternative. It's extremely electronic. You know what I mean? So it's hard to really even say it's hip-hop because, like, the genres that I've been toying with for years now are, like, so all over the place. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm genre bending. But, like, I really am that, you know? And I really, like, you know, the album's labeled as alternative music. It's not labeled as hip-hop. Yeah, and it's because, like, you know, there's a rock song at the end. You've got, like, three electronic songs. You've got one extremely pop song with a pop singer on it and a dance break. You know, it's like, there's so many different pieces of music, you know, just because I'm rhythmically hitting it and I'm not melodic. You know what I mean? Yeah, obviously I'm rapping. What we can call it, what it is rapping, is rhyming, is poetry. It's all the standard bullshit, but it's like, there's so many things happening that it would be a disservice to the record itself if all we were focusing on is this is hip hop, because I am greatly inspired by so many different things. Like, honestly, the biggest thing that inspired that record was, like, Demon Days Gorillaz. That was, like,
yeah.
When that album, you know what I mean? When Gorillaz dropped Demon Days, like, to me, that was such an amalgamation of different sounds and textures and things. So So yeah, I mean, I am a rapper because I have done battle rap. I've done like the cypher stuff. I've really paid my dues in the hip hop world, which sounds crazy saying, but like I really have. I'm an undefeated battler. I've done the cyphers. I've done all the freestyles. I've rapped on the radio. I've never been on the radio, but like I've been on a radio station where they had me do the whole like, "Yo, rap for me right now."
Right.
So I delivered in every way that is expected of a rapper, and I'm never going to be ashamed of what that is, even with how corny it can be in modern day time.
No, I don't think you should be, and I think you nailed it on the head. I think it would have been a shame to title that album hip hop, or to sell it as a hip hop genre. And that's actually something that me and my nephew talked about the day the album came out. We were like, "Did you notice it was alternative?" And we're like, "Yeah." And then we listened to it. We're like, "Yeah," because it's a lot of different things. And you're right. I mean, there is, you know, a lot of guest artists that you have on the songs, which definitely is amazing. And the last track is rock and roll with hip hop. And that's your brother, right? And didn't I meet him in Philly when you came out to my show?
Yeah, you met him in Philly. He's come to a lot of my comedy shows. And just for the record, to make it official, I never stopped doing stand-up. Like, Actually, the last time I was on stage performing anything before the show you just saw was last year, right before the pandemic. I was at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
I haven't stopped doing stand-up. I slowed down on it for a bit because I felt as though there was something happening where I felt as though the shows were going well and a lot of people were like, "Oh, you're really funny," and this and that. I felt there was something unfulfilling. Like, I felt as though I was putting a lot of effort into writing, but I wasn't communicating much. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to be funny, but it's another thing to talk about something interesting and profound while making someone laugh. And I felt like I was just focused on being so funny.
Yeah.
So entertaining that I felt like I was essentially, it's like when a rapper just raps about like bitches and hoes and silly shit, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're rapping, but you're not doing anything. Nothing's being accomplished with that kind of record other than like people could shake their ass in a club. But like, so with me, I was like, man, I'm making people laugh so hard and I'm getting great feedback, but why do I feel unfulfilled creatively? And so hip hop, I got really serious about it because I knew this was the one outlet where I could just say whatever I want in any kind of wild ass way, whether it was very on the nose or abstract. But yes, to go back to the question, the last song on the album is featuring Mr. Mountain, which is my brother and his band.
And he's phenomenal too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he's awesome, man. He's a great rock musician, and he's been doing this shit for years though.
I think it's one of my favorite songs on the album. Well, obviously Welcome to Oz is up there, I'd say in like top three, and then the one you did with your brother was before I went to the concert, I was saying I think that's my favorite song on the album was the one with your brother, the last track. And then there's another one in the middle. I might be blanking on the name. I think it might, hold on, I'll pull it up right now.
Wicked or Kansas are both directly in the middle.
It might have been Wicked. Hold on, let me see. I'll tell you, as soon as I see it, I'll know. It's like one of those things that as soon as you see it, you know. I think it's Haven't You Heard.
Ah, with Jenny. Yeah, that's the very pop record.
It's a dope sound. Like, I could legitimately, I can like legitimately see, you know, that being a catchy thing that would be a hit, you know, on all the major radio stations. But and to go back for a second, I wasn't implying that you are not a stand-up anymore, but just trying to point out that you're just good at many different things, dude.
I only say that because you're not. I'm not saying what you say, but
you don't want people to get the wrong idea that you don't do it anymore.
Well, a lot of people have thought I quit. There was a lot of people, specifically because I remember I had a battle somebody. I had a rap battle at the Comedy Store when they did a merging event of comedy and hip-hop. And I battled this dude from Odd Future, actually. And one of the judges was Frank Castillo, who's a comedian who I know personally.
Yeah, me too.
And he was there doing stand-up with me back in the day for a long time. And so he's seeing me do this. And in his mind, he was like, oh, my God, you retired from comedy to become a battle rapper.
Yeah.
And he was like, he thought that was super cool. And then another guy who was a judge was Jeremiah Watkins, another really funny comic who – somebody I knew from forever ago, and we're like Facebook friends, and he's another one. So there was kind of this, like, I think Nick gave it all up to be a rapper. I was like, that's fair, because I did make a really sharp left turn.
Well, yeah, and then but I remember the last time you were on my podcast, we talked about that you're not done with stand-up, and you constantly will text me every now and then and be like, dude, like, you know, I've been thinking about some bits. You know, but you're right, it's hard to — well, first of all, stand-up's hard in general, but it's hard to get a message out. Like, if you want to put a message out, whether it be positive or just, like, shine light on a subject, it's kind of hard to do in stand-up. It is a better outlet to do it with music, and you can do it. But, yeah, because when you're doing stand-up, it's like, if you go out there the whole time trying to give them, like, a message, it's like, okay, buddy, but tell some jokes, too.
It's like the difference between, like, a Jim Carrey or a George Carlin. You're either one or the other, but, like, trying to find that middle ground.
Or you could say it's, like, George Carlin versus George Carlin, depending on what year you look at George Carlin.
Yeah, I guess.
Because he went,
true,
like, super preachy later on. And yeah, I mean, I try to, you know, if there's a message I want to do, I'll do it. Like, right now my tour is called Only Love Can Save the World, and I sell shirts with, like, the logo on it and stuff like that. And sure. And I do kind of address it in the middle of my set, which leads into, like, two bits, which is good. But then besides that, on stage, when you're a stand-up, you have to constantly be worried about your job, which make them laugh, you know? But
I was the thing, man, because I had a buddy of mine who was like, hey, man, you know, you're so funny, but, like, you should talk about some of these things you're always talking about personally. And I'm like, well, look, man, these people paid this money. They're out here, like, they need to be laughing their ass off. They don't really need to be educated tonight. And I know that's, like, sacrilegious to say as a comic, because to me, I think there's a lot of comics who get a little bit too dark, and they get a little bit too, like, existential. And it's there's a place for that, and I think that's why podcasts are so successful, because I think a podcast is a perfect place for a comic to really explore. But, like, you know, when you're up there, you got to remember, this is entertainment business. This is the entertainment industry. Before, we're not giving TED Talks, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
We're making people laugh. Like, there's absurdity. We're lying a lot of the time. We're making shit up. We're exasperating the truth ridiculously. And so there was this thing of, like, all right, I love being goofy. I love telling wild-ass stories. I love being physical. I'm a very physical comic. And so now I'm kind of in this place where when I do return back to comedy heavy, which I do have a plan for, my goal is to not ever stop being the observational, wild storyteller. But I think it would behoove me as now a 27-year-old man to start creating something people could walk away with. You know what I mean? It's not just about — I want them to laugh in the moment, but I want them to talk later. And that's
If you go back and listen to my first comedy album, which, by the way, was recorded, I think, in, like, 2016, if you go back and listen to that comedy album, at the end of it, I actually say, I want people to leave my shows, not only have laughed, I want them to even cry. I want them to have felt something, a nostalgia. Maybe I reminded you of a story between you and your parents or your family. And just, I want you to leave being reminded about something in your life, and you can relate to it. Like, you can literally go back to my first album and I say that on there that long ago. And after the pandemic, dude, like, I have been — well, first of all, I never fully stopped doing stand-up during the pandemic. I was still doing it, dude, wherever I could. Basements, my garage, I did a show. Like, I did it wherever. But when the pandemic was, like, coming towards an end and I was coming out of it, I was fully motivated to do more than stand-up, which is the only thing I'm good at. I wish I can play an instrument. I wish I can sing and rap. I can't, dude. But I do – I have done different things. At the end of my shows, I always try to do something – and it's always different every show, where I might – have fun with the crowd. Or, you know, one day I brought like cookies, and I passed out cookies, and I sat with the crowd afterward, and we had cookies and shit. Or one day I brought, like,
that's
this big easel.
People remember. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's like, man, Augustino, that guy, remember he had that, it was like a moment. You're kind of creating exactly. a moment outside of just the fun part.
And it's a part of just like sharing a good moment, and it truly is that only love can save the world. You know, it's like we're just out there spreading goodness and getting people a break from the shit going on in the world. And you know, and I've whenever I can, I love incorporating music in it. Like, I was just in Austin, and one of my friends is a drummer, and he had his drum set with him. Like, no other members of the band, literally just one dude in the drums. And I was like, fucking set him up on stage. I'm like, I don't care if you play before the comics and in between comics, you know. We should do something, dude. We should collaborate soon, like a stand up slash, you know, musical performance. Yeah, if we ever can.
Like, the whole album I wrote is actually, it operates, I'm probably the only electronic hip-hop artist who can have an acoustic set, and the only reason why I say this is because every song was designed to be also performed a cappella, like mm-hmm. a spoken word. It all flows as a spoken word. So if I do need to go do a cafe or like an yeah. open mic somewhere that's like not a huge production, I could just whip out any of my records on a slow down pace and really spill it out, because lyrically it's so dense and it's so potent and it's of great value to just hear, you know, the message and how it's all been put together and how it's delivered ultimately, I think serves as even better, because you're not within the confines of a beat telling you like you need to be hitting it like this. So it's like, I would love to do that. I used to put on huge comedy shows where I'd have musicians in between yeah. comics all the time, and it was extremely successful. It was yeah. at the Flapper's main room, and we'd pretty much almost sell that place out. That's like 200 seats.
It's a big room, their main room.
Yeah, and you know, I would have comic, guitarist, singer, comic, singer with on his piano, comic, you know, just back and forth, and it was called the Block Party, Nick Galarza's right. Block Party back in the day, and it was fucking awesome. It worked perfectly, you know. And then obviously once music became more serious, I was like, all right, I think I need to.
Well, I think it was the right move, dude, because I think you produced a phenomenal album. Besides this album, like a couple of your other singles, I guess we can call them singles, I've already had on my iPod that I play regularly, dude. It's just, I think you make phenomenal music, and honestly, I'm not just saying that. I mean, I do want people to go out and download your album, but that's not why I'm saying that. Honestly, I didn't even have you on the show to talk about that, but we're here anyway. But I do. First of all, I love that you're doing spoken word. I love that about your show that I just saw. In between, I want to say almost every single song, which is yeah. something very unique that you don't see at concerts. And the lyrics of the spoken word are as powerful as the lyrics from the song. And yeah, yeah. It was a great experience, and it's what I'm trying to do at my shows, is bringing a different type of experience and just touching people in a different way. So I got mad respect for that. Yeah, dude. It's totally awesome. So what I did want to have you on to talk a little bit about is because so I'm doing a documentary. It's a docu short. I'm going to submit it into some festivals for a short documentary, and it's going to be called, it is called Non-Essential. And it is about artists, performing artists, who were basically told we were non-essential during the pandemic. So a lot of people were told they were essential, then there were some people who were told they weren't, and I think it's crazy to tell someone, because non-essential is basically a nice way of saying you're not important enough. Yeah, like, you know, we're not going to risk you doing your stupid little thing, you know, and it kind of really, and I'm not just saying only artists went through that, because a lot of people were told they're non-essential, but it definitely doesn't feel good when someone tells you, no, your thing that you do, no, it's not considered important. Like, we don't need that right now. And yeah. I especially felt it when things semi-opened. We were still in a pandemic, but you can eat outdoors. Almost every state, including California, which had the tightest lockdown, you can go to a restaurant and you can sit outside and you can eat. And the documentary is also going to be about my fight. I actually fought with LA County, and they don't let you physically attend the meetings, but they let you call in to every single board meeting. it's every other Tuesday of the month, and I would call in every time, and you're allowed to call in and speak your piece, okay? And they would refuse to read the thing that I wrote. Like, I wrote something saying that, like, just allow us artists, musicians, and comedians to do outdoor shows. Which, like, at one point they let, like, drive-in theaters do it, but even that was, like, way later. But it just made no sense that you can go to a restaurant and sit with your friends at 6 feet apart, but you couldn't put one person or maybe three people in a band, 6 feet away from them, performing for them outdoors. It just didn't, like, there was really no reason for it. And I went I called into every board meeting. They didn't want to hear what I had to say. I have documented emails back and forth with the head of the Board of Supervisors of Los Angeles, who, if you saw in the news, like literally the day after I spoke with her, she was like busted for being in a restaurant at like a party. Yeah, and her responses are just like, we just feel that like comedy, or live performance causes people to stay and linger. And I'm like, have you ever been to a comedy show? Why would anyone stay at a comedy show when there wasn't comedy going on? You know, at a restaurant, you got people coming, they sit down and eat and they leave, and then the next person comes and they sit down and eat and they leave. So you have so much table turnover in one night, not to mention people waiting outside for their table. But with a comedy show, you have pre-sale tickets, which limits how many people can go, which means that people that don't have tickets won't even show up. And we're talking about one show a night, which means that you've only got once a night someone sitting at that table. It's actually way safer to do a comedy show or a concert. So I wrote this whole thing. It's honestly like 8 pages. It was called the Outdoor Plan Act, for the Live Entertainment Outdoor Plan Act. And I wrote it, dude. And I pitched it to them, and they just refused to pass, like, let anybody even read it. They would, like, refuse it. Yeah, so that's all going to be in the documentary and stuff. But I want to talk to you. I mean, I can talk to 1,000 comics, but I want to get the point of view of a musician who, about your state of mind during the pandemic. Because I know that some people who are able to do things not in public, like comedians need the public. But I know a lot of musicians that were like, cool, I'll use this time to write and record my music indoors away from people, right? But then those same people I talked to, they still went through a mental thing, a depression. There was something about being told you couldn't go out and perform it, or yet you're non-essential.
It comes down to something real simple, man, because a lot of these fucking people, they'll argue with you till the cows come home, bro. There's nothing you could hit them with so many facts, but we live in a world currently beleaguered with opinions that facts seem to get lost in the mix. But I'll break it down for you real fucking simple. Back during like the Civil War days, basically any archaic war predating several hundred years ago, you'd see two armies on a battlefield. And they'd line up, and you'd see the other ones line up, and they'd aim their guns, and sometimes they'd take turns attacking each other. It was fucking crazy, you know? And something I always thought about as a kid was, why is it that all these people are just out in an open field, literally all prepared to die and fight? And they've all got their guns, obviously, and their weapons to protect them. Why is it that among all these militant, dangerous men, there's always the guy with the drum? There's always the guy just banging on the drum as they march towards this. And I always thought, like, what the fuck is the point of that? Like, he's going to die. And, like, someone get this guy a gun. And it's because my ignorance as a child was that it's the power of morale. Morale is the reason for that drummer. That drummer's job is to create an emotional response from these soldiers and prepare them for this courageous, dangerous act, morale. So when you strip an entire community, which is built on morale, bullshit, and entertainment, which is what Los Angeles is, morale, bullshit, and entertainment. If you strip away morale, if you strip away entertainment, you are just stuck with bullshit, bro. Mm-hmm. And so when you are essentially taking away the one thing LA is important for culturally, because if you think about LA, it's one of the most important cities in the planet because it is the entertainment capital of the planet. If you take away Los Angeles' ability to express and entertain and build morale based off of the kind of personalities and artists who exist and affect people in real life, you've practically killed this city.
Yeah.
100%. Because right now, the city has opened back up.
Mm-hmm.
But something I've noticed is that the morale is not back.
Yeah.
Everything is back to normal. Like, we're not wearing masks. Right. We're out here. Like, my show, there was, like 125 people in that small space.
Yeah.
No one wore a fucking mask, and they were mosh pitting and running around. But the irony is that the morale is dead. I talk to a lot of my friends, and people don't want to go to a party. People don't want to hang out. People don't want to go to an open mic. You know, people don't feel like seeing a live show. You know how many people I know who've moved away from Los Angeles?
Yeah, nope. Me too, bro.
Dude, everyone's moving to Nashville for some reason. It's like, and I don't blame them because you've completely taken away the whole reason why anyone fucking came here in the first place. Yeah. Let's not pretend like LA is paradise.
Right.
It's not by any stretch of the imagination a nice place to live unless you're living in extreme luxury.
Unless you got money.
We come here because of what it offers, the morale, meeting wild individuals, meeting people who can change your life, who you could change their life, meeting people who one show could turn your whole career around. You know, one person hearing you sing in a bar while they're grabbing a coffee and they just so happen to work at fucking Warner Records. It's just like, this is that dreamy place, and they've completely stripped the dreams out of it in order to accommodate some kind of silly, asinine rhetoric to protect the media's perception of safety.
Yeah. And do you think, like, the people you talk to that they don't want to go to hang out, they don't want to go to party, do you think that it's they're not ready, they don't feel it's safe yet, or maybe all of that and something mentally happened to them during the pandemic?
It's 100% only mental, because they didn't even care when COVID was happening. They didn't. I've had friends who joked about getting it. I got COVID back in October, but like most of my friends, because they're younger, they were much more like lackadaisical. They're like, dude, I got the Rona, you know what I mean, like, see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's never been a fear-based thing. But what happened, it is a mentally taxing thing where you feel as though, did LA come to an end? Because right now, that's what I'm even struggling with, is like, I've got so many things I'm working on between producing films and, you know, work. I just finished an album and I'm trying to do a bunch of live shows and I'm trying to do more stand-up. I wrote a play, you know what I mean? There's all these things I'm trying to do, but I think, like, is LA even a place that provides me these opportunities anymore? Because the morale is so, so dead. And then on top of that, you have to consider what the pandemic did other than just physically stop people from doing things. There was a lot of controversy because our government, not to get into the whole conspiracy theory thing because I can't stand that, but I will say that our government has never been more blatantly dishonest with us in history. We've always been lied to by our government, but God, have they never been this bad at it? And people are starting to see it. They're starting to think, like, things are just not adding up for people.
Yeah.
So now there's an extreme lack of trust in the government. There's an extreme lack of trust in politics. And, you know, and then with everything that happened with George Floyd last year, I mean, when it rains, it fucking pours, bro, because, you know, you have an entire nation who's just witnessing barbaric fucking treatment of people. And so you have to just start thinking, like, it just takes away something really special for people. Like, I think that outside of just feeling like we physically can't go out, it's like even comedy changed, you know, cancel culture changed. People have become more sensitive. People have become less willing to laugh because things just aren't funny anymore. Like, we live in a world where, like, we can sit here and make fun of all kinds of shit, but It becomes more poignant day after day when you start realizing, like, damn, we kind of live on a slight hell on earth here. we're so privileged and so entitled just to be Americans, yet we are the most complaining society in the entire planet. And it's because there's so much, such a broken infrastructure, and there's so many fucked up things, bro. And so outside of just being like, hey, you're not allowed to be within 6 feet from somebody, there's just also this like, hey, it's not even right for you to talk that way or share those opinions.
Yeah.
You know, we're living in an extremely liberal society now, which is to me just as detrimental as an extremely conservative society. Because it's the same shit. It's just indoctrination of like what you think and feel. And if anyone disagrees with me, then you're clearly sexist, racist, misogynist.
You know, it's two different extremes, and neither extreme is
right.
Is,
right. Yeah. And so like these liberals think they're saving the planet. And to me, the planet's never been more weak. When conservatives have the upper hand, the planet's never been more dickheaded. So it's like there is no
liberal doesn't even mean what liberal means anymore. I mean, in some things I'm liberal, bro. In some things, but it's like, you know, and I seem like I'm conservative because liberals move so far. What do you call it? Left.
Yeah.
That like I seem like I'm right, but it's like I'm not. I'm from LA, dude.
Because it wasn't until I started realizing this like extreme wild change in the just the overall behavioral zeitgeist of Americans that I was like, am I conservative? And I'm like, no, I'm definitely not conservative, but I definitely don't agree with what these fucking weirdos are talking about.
It's just a big circus show no matter what. Both sides are politics. Never forget that. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. And so
and we're entertainers, dude. Like, and we just stand in the middle, and our job is to entertain them all the masses, I don't care what you are. And at the end of the day, there's way more good people in the world than there is bad people. Even the ones that preach the thing that you don't agree with, they just bought the wrong lie.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're only fighting for it because they really are a good person deep down. You know what I mean? So there's way more good people than bad people.
Intentions are good. The problem is that
too much lying.
That people are evil. It's just that they're inconsiderate. Mm-hmm. They don't consider all circumstances.
There's a lot of that.
You know what I mean? People are just not. They like that's the reason why I think it's so important to play the devil's advocate, because you really do have to consider all sides to every story. Even one of them seems egregiously wrong. Like, so what true. Led that person to be so wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where I'm at of like, yeah, everything's open again, but something feels like I feel like the entire social scene of Los Angeles, and mind you, I'm 27, I'm a young man, I'm not some old ass dude who's just like, oh, I'm just settling down at home with my kids, like I'm young, you know. And so it's weird for me to witness so many people act as if they've suddenly turned 48. You know? They're just like, yeah, I don't go out anymore. I don't really. It's become so cool to be apathetic. It's become so cool to be antisocial.
Yeah.
It's become so cool to be introverted. It's become so cool to just do it online.
I agree.
I'll have the food. I could just Postmate it, bro. I'm not going to go wait in line and interact.
Yeah,
somebody.
A lot of the stuff in my emails to the city was me. You can see, dude, it'll all be in the documentary. I will show you the emails. It's me telling them, like, a lot of people left this city. A lot of the most talented people have left this city. And I go, and I was tempted to leave this city because I need to make a living, and I'm an artist. And you're making it impossible for an artist to make a living here. You're telling us we're not essential. And I go, but you know what? I'm not going to leave the city. I'm from LA. A lot of guys came here to do something. I'm from here. And I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight for my city. So I'm going to email you every single day this shit. You know what I mean? And I'm going to stay and I'm going to fight. It's open now. It had nothing to do with me. But we're still going to talk about the artists. Like, everything you're saying is right about each side of the politics. I agree with everything. And you might think that, like, with all that crazy shit and all the evil going on in the world, that, like, if I say, dude, just do you. You're an artist. Do what you're good at. Mm-hmm. And it might seem silly to go, like, oh, really? You're going to change the world, or you're going to make it better because he sang a song or you told a joke? Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I ain't going to run for president because I'll eventually become it, a part of the problem. You know what I mean? We ain't going to run for mayor or whatever the fuck. I'm going to do what I'm good at. I'm going to start one small room at a time, a 50-seater, 100-seater, 200-seater, 1,000-seater, one piece at a time. We're going to make it a better place by our art. And that's what artists do. And that's why we were so essential. so essential when you needed us the most. You banned us.
You cannot be a good artist without being empathetic. Excuse me. You cannot be a good artist. It doesn't matter what skill you have, what college degree, or how much experience you have. You will never be a good artist if you lack empathy.
I like that, too. You're right. Well, that's it, man.
We are in the business of humans, bro. This is the if you are in the art in the entertainment business, you are in the people business.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So, you're damn right, bro. Was that Michael Scott?
It probably is.
But you're absolutely right, dude. This was great, dude. That's all I needed from you, man. I thank you for being on. You're always a great guest, and you're always welcome. And now that things are open, I hope I see a lot more of you, and we should do something together, bro.
As soon as you're ready. I'm trying to perform as much this summer as possible with the album out. I've been doing nothing this past week other than emailing and setting up shows for like the next few months.
Well, when the documentary is ready, dude, I might be calling on you to make some music for it, because it's definitely going to need that.
Say less. You can use any of my music in my entire catalog.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, because it's for a good cause, and it's going to be good, and we'll have some fun with it. Nick Alarez, everybody, you can download the his album. Is called Welcome to Oz. The artist's name is Player One, W-O-N, and you can follow him on Instagram at Player One, right?
At Nick Galarza.
Oh, sorry.
If you search Player One on Instagram,
it'll come up too.
I pop up too, which I don't know how that works.
But search Player One wherever you listen to music: Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, and you'll see the album Welcome to Oz. It's dope. You're gonna really love it. And if you're already a subscriber to one of those services, you're gonna be able to download it for free. So, costs you nothing. Just download it, and you know what? While you're at it, download my comedy album. All right, it's called The Bad Guy. Okay, but don't just search my name, because if you type in The Bad Guy, fucking Billie Eilish comes up. So, but my album's called The Bad Guy. You guys, everything's at homeschoolpod.com. Make sure you subscribe to me on Instagram as well, Augustino Zoida, and get tickets at AugustinoComedian.com or homeschoolpod.com. Come see me live. And thank you, Nick, for being on. I love you, buddy. We're going to grow together. I'm excited. I've already watched you grown so much, and I'm excited that we're going to grow in our careers together, dude. So thanks for being
on. I'm very, very excited for this year, because there's never been a better year to talk about this country.
Yeah, you got that right, dude. There's never been a better year to start from scratch either, you know? It's awesome. It's like we get to start from scratch, but with experience.
Yeah, I know. It's like we hit the ground running, kind of.
Exactly. So go ahead and log off, dude. I'll say goodbye to these guys. Thank you, man. It was good to see you. I appreciate your time.
Hey, man. Thank you. I will talk to you soon.
Later, bro. Peace. You guys, that was Nick Galarza. I've known that guy, that dude, since he was like, I don't know, I want to say like 18, 19 years old. From comedy, and he was always really funny, talented. Just check out the stuff he draws and paints online, and his music is phenomenal. I'm not just saying that. I literally have every song he's ever released in my phone, and I play it all the time. Check it out. It's called Welcome to Oz, and I'm really excited for this documentary. As you can tell, it's an important piece. It's time sensitive, so I'm in a hurry to get it done, and I will be using a lot of footage from different episodes of this podcast, and even this episode, and as well as the footage I've been filming while I am on tour. Which, by the way, my tour this year is called Only Love Can Save the World. So make sure you get tickets to see me live. I'm coming to a town near you. Up next, it's Portland, then Seattle, then. Then Boston, Massachusetts. Then Maui. I'm currently working on stuff with Nebraska. So, guys, make sure you are going to homeschoolpod.com. Click on tour. And make sure you click on merch to pick up a shirt. Like the Only Love Can Save the World, or Document the Journey, or the Ex-President shirt. It's all dope. We appreciate the support. The money goes to help pay for myself and the other comedians I take to open for me's travel on this tour. So, I appreciate you guys. And I'm Augustino Zoido. I'll see you next time. Peace.
Homeschool Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschool Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
No, okay.
I don't want to do that at all.